Good morning and welcome, everyone. This is October 21st, 2019, meeting of the Chelan County PUD District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for coming today and remind you that if you have an electronic device with you that makes any kind of noise, if you would take this opportunity to put it on silent, we'd appreciate it. Today's meeting is both a study and a business session, with the study session starting this morning now, and the afternoon business session will start at 1 o'clock. We welcome public input at all of our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. So if you would like to have address any item on the agenda, please step forward to the microphone across from me here. Please state your name and address for the record, and if you would be kind enough to limit your comments to 3 minutes, that would give everyone an opportunity to speak that might want to speak. Today we have all five commissioners present: General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Garfin, Clerk of the Board, are with us today. So this is the time we would normally do the Pledge of Allegiance and a safety minute. Bob Bowers joining us this morning to conduct those for us. Thank you, Bob.
Good morning. Would you join me?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. My name is Bob Bauer, and I am the Outreach Education Specialist, and my office is at the Rocky Reach Discovery Center at Rocky Reach Dam. And I have the pleasure to share a safety minute with you and then just give you a couple of brief updates of things going on at Rocky Reach. First, just a short safety minute. I saw a cartoon not long ago, and it was a cartoon of a cliff that visitors were enabled to walk out to the edge of. And it was at their own peril. They entered at their own risk. There was a sign there that was very clear: you can do this, but you do it at your own risk and your own peril. But if they were brave enough, they could edge out to the very edge of this cliff, and they could look down at the most beautiful, beautiful canyon exactly 800 feet below. And so a few visitors did that, but the ones who did really enjoyed the view. Interesting thing about this cartoon, though: about halfway down the side of the cliff, in big black bold letters were written these words: in case you have fallen, here are three safety tips before you hit bottom. I want to share with you today six safety tips very quickly, very briefly. You will have heard all of these before, but these are the ones that tend to get us the most. These are the unintentional injury-related deaths. And they are a result not of not knowing what to do when it happens, but when it happens, it's just too late to do anything. So the top six, according to the National Safety Council: number one is poisoning. In 2011, poisoning became the leading cause of all unintentional injury-related deaths for all ages. This is especially true in children. So poisoning can happen by gases, chemicals, other substances, prescription drug use. I was in St. Augustine, Florida a couple of weeks ago, and I visited the Fountain of Youth, where Ponce de Leon went to discover the Fountain of Youth. And then I read in preparation for this that he was actually poisoned to death. And so the Fountain of Youth didn't work. But anyway, just the safety tip is really simple. Keep your chemicals, your cleaning agents, prescription, non-prescription drugs. Make sure they're in high places out of the reach of children. Remind your kids and remind your grandkids of that. Also, make sure that you keep anything that is edible away from anything that is not edible. In other words, don't store your Comet and your rice in the same cupboard. It's common sense, but sometimes if we do an inventory in our home, we find out that we're kind of guilty of violating those common sense principles. Number two, motor vehicle crashes. No one wakes up in the morning thinking that they're going to lose a loved one in a car crash, but motor vehicle crashes are the second leading cause of unintentional injury-related deaths overall. It's a result of impaired driving, distracted driving, speeding, and inexperience. So remind yourself, and I really challenge you to remind your kids, your spouse, remind your friends, when you're driving, you're not doing anything else. You're driving. You're not texting. You're not surfing. You're not arguing with your passenger. When you're driving, you're driving. Number three is falls. In 2017, 36,338 people died from falls. According to Injury Facts, falling is the third leading cause of unintentional injury-related deaths over all age groups, but it's the number one cause of death for those age 65 and older. It has been said that pride goes before the fall. Pride says I don't need a handrail. Pride says I don't need a cane. Pride says I don't need a walker. Pride says I don't need someone to hold my hand to get across this ditch. Pride says I don't need two hands holding the bottom of the ladder while I'm taking the Christmas lights down. Pride says I don't need to hold on to my handle on my car when I get out of the in the parking lot on the icy parking lot. Be careful, because pride does go before the fall. It's okay to get some help along the way. Number four is choking. Suffocation is the fourth leading cause of unintentional injury-related death over all age groups, and choking on food or other objects is the primary cause. Simple tip, we all know it, but we have to do it. Cut up your food, chew your food, and just like you don't text and drive, you don't talk and eat. You're doing one or the other, but not both at the same time. And just a reminder to ask your kids, ask your grandkids, ask your family members, does everybody understand the Heimlich maneuver? Because it does save lives. Number five is drowning. Does not include boating accidents. So not including boating accidents, about 10 people drown every single day. It's the fifth leading cause of unintentional injury-related deaths over all ages. It's the number one cause for children ages 1 to 4. Those children die most often in swimming pools and in bathtubs. So when I visited my daughter this week, our conversation was about bathtubs and swimming pools. Number six, fires and burns. And of course, we're getting in that season where the heaters are going to kick in. It's time to change filters. It's time to check smoke alarms. Fire is the sixth leading cause of unintentional injury-related death over all ages. About 2,646 deaths were caused by burns and injuries related to fire in 2015. Many fires start at night when family members are asleep. Make sure you have an evacuation plan in your family, and make sure you have checked the batteries on your smoke alarms. So those are my safety tips, and if I might just share a couple of updates, things that are going on at the Rocky Reach Discovery Center. I wanted to share with you that last Saturday we filled up the Lady of the Lake boat, and we took our Lake Chelan info cruise. We had three very dynamic speakers. We had renowned anthropologist Bob Marendorf. We had Randy Lewis, who is a member of the Colville Confederated Tribes. He's from multi-bands. He kind of calls himself the mongrel. But he really represents Native American affairs very, very well, and he's a great storyteller. And then we had author and historian Bill Lehman share. And to a person who got on the boat and got off the boat, every single one shook my hand getting off and said, man, this was really an incredible experience. So thank you, Cheyenne County PD, for supporting those outreach events. This coming Saturday, we have 80 people registered to take hard hat tours at the Chelan Falls Powerhouse. So we're excited about this Saturday. And then I just wanted to give you one final invite to our November 1st night at the museum. Boy, what a time of mixed emotions. I'm really a nostalgic guy. Love walking through that museum. It's been there for way longer than I've been here. But it's time to do something new. And so I've discovered this. The sadness over walking out of that museum for the last time is getting overwhelmed now with the excitement of the experience that you're going to be able to encounter in 2021. So Friday, November 1st, I just want to invite you from 11 until 2. All employees are invited to come out to the gallery and the museum, kind of do that last walkthrough. And then in the afternoon, we have kind of a special invitee session. But in the evening, it's open to the public from 5:30 until 8:30. It's kind of that let's go for the last time in all of human history and experience the Museum of the Columbia. Then we will be closed throughout the year 2020, but we're looking at a hopeful date of around March, April of 2021 of really knocking your socks off with a brand new, high-quality, interactive discovery experience for our public and our visitors. So with that, thank you for letting me come and share with you today, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Bob.
I have a comment.
Yes, please, Commissioner Conger.
So clearly Bob is a great educator. That was a terrific safety minute. Thank you. So on the boat cruise yesterday, 2 days ago, on Saturday, there were over 100 people.
There was 119.
119, yes. On the cruise. It was raining and it was cold. I am so embarrassed. I apologize. I, again, got the time wrong, and I showed up at 12:30. I thought in my calendar, I said be there by 12:45, so I thought I am going to be really early this year. I was there at 12:30, no boat, and I thought, oh my gosh, maybe they canceled it. Went inside and talked to the gal inside, and she said, oh no, the boat left at 12 noon. So I really apologize. Next year, seriously, I'm going to ask Rebecca or somebody if they would please. I don't know. I can't seem to get that one the time right, but I'm sorry I missed it.
You missed a good one, but we will make sure we get you a special invite.
Well, it shouldn't be your responsibility. I have to figure out a way to do better, but anyway.
And it is possible that the other 119 were wrong on the time. So.
Oh, you're so good at that.
Thanks, Bob.
So, Bob, I've got to share. You know, you are an extraordinary educator, and you were here several years ago with the Safety Minute. And I believe it was here, and maybe it was just one-on-one. We were talking about night driving, and you said you never go over 55 miles an hour because of deer in this area, and I have remembered it to this day. So you do instill education in people you're talking to, so thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
You're welcome. So at this moment...
Can we do the CPO first?
Yeah. So, Steve, would you like to present the CPO?
I would like to. So, we've got a really good cycle of personal ownership winner for this month. I want to invite up Caleb Durkee. Would you come on up, please? So, Caleb works out at Rocky Reach, and there's work going on out there. We recall C9 has been under repair for quite some time, and they're getting ready to pull it back together again. They're getting ready to do a lift out there, and this is just the thing we want to celebrate, a moment like this. So Caleb says, hey, wait a second, have we thought about the bolts? There's 3-inch bolts out there, obviously very important to holding this thing together. You're going to do a big lift, you need those bolts to hold or bad things can happen. And so he says, has anybody inspected those bolts recently? And in fact, no one could remember that they had been. So stop work, exactly what we would want to have happen. Go take a look. Questions about 10 of the 28 bolts. Further inspection, it turns out one of them really does need to be replaced. This is just the kind of behavior that we want to encourage around here, the safety and the confidence that people would have that no matter where you are in the organization, if you have a question, you need to make sure that you ask that question and that it will be acted on. So feeling really good about the fact that this was brought forward as a nomination. And Caleb, just wanted to say thank you for what you've done there.
Appreciated there. So,
he's got a
proud craftsman.
There you go.
I just want to accept it on behalf of all of us craftsmen, right? We do this every day. It's what we're made to do. It's what we're trained to do. So it's not me. It's everybody. Everybody I work with does this every single day. So it's neat that we get awarded for it. But I can't take it myself, right? Andy helped, and we're moving in the right direction. I mean, I'm pretty low on the pole, but I never felt that way. Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you.
Caleb,
thank
please you. Take the message back to everyone you work with, and Andy, just how much we appreciate what you've done and what you're all doing every single day. So thank you.
Caleb, I love your humility. But you're young, but you have courage, the courage to say, hey, has anybody done this? I applaud you for that. That's awesome.
You gained a lot of traction.
That's awesome.
No resistance.
That's good.
Cool.
Excellent.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great. So at this time, I'd like to present a 5-year pin. To General Manager Steve Wright. Now, if any of you can count on your fingers and toes, you realize he's been here longer than 5 years, so we're a little bit in remiss for presenting this a little bit late. But it is with great pride that I would like to present this pin to you for your 5-year service pin.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's late because it took me a year to accept the gift. So I think that one was on me. It wasn't on anybody else. But thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I actually have one that I want to do. Lorna, would you come on up? Hopefully this isn't too much of a surprise.
I'm just going to pass yours along to her.
Well, Lorna has also achieved her 5 years for the district and all the things that she's been here and all the work that she's done. And say thank you.
Yeah.
It's been a lot in 5 years.
Thank you.
Yeah. Boy, that's really
thank you, Lorna.
Fast.
It has.
Yeah.
And my brother was visiting the last couple of weeks, and as he was being introduced around, he made the note of how really important this organization is in this community and what a community it makes it. And it was fun to see that through his eyes.
I really feel that way. So,
thank you all for keeping me for 5 years.
Thank you, Lorna. Okay, so commissioners, we have an agenda in front of us. Any item on that agenda can be subject to the or on the consent agenda can be subject to transfer to the regular agenda. Do I hear any such request?
Well, there was a recommendation that we could move resolutions 13, 14, and 15 to the consent agenda, and I would move that we do that and approve the consent agenda or have those moved to the consent agenda. The approval comes this afternoon, I guess. So.
Yes. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Been seconded, moved and seconded. Do I hear any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it. Okay. So, Steve, would you be kind enough to carry on with the quarterly board balance scorecard?
I can, but I'm going to throw it back to you. So sure. This would be the board balance scorecard status update. And so the information is provided. Rebecca has put it up on the screen.
Oh, there it is.
And I'm going to then throw it back to you in terms of the reports on the individual items.
Okay. Commissioners, Ann, I think you're the first on S1.
I'm the owner of S1 Sustainer Public Partnership. And, you know, my glasses don't help. I think I can read most of that. So it looks like we're red. We're not yellow. We're red. We're kind of red, aren't we?
Yes. Yeah.
So we haven't quite achieved our... There we go. That helped. I haven't brought it up yet online. Thank you. So it states on there pretty clearly the first objective quarterly update based on information from Blue Books targets 75% at attendance at all meetings. In the second quarter, we had a little bit lower than we should due to scheduling conflicts. So, but we think that will right itself and we'll be where we need to be by the end of the year. And then, same thing with the second one, quarter up on Blue Books again, 60% attendance at all meetings. Again, I think we'll be where we need to be by the end of the year. And then, last meeting, I brought this up. I thought maybe we could somehow or another sort of expand this and sort of broaden how we set goals and have indicators and so forth for sustaining our public partnership. And we actually had a really good discussion at our workshop. We talked about this and we said, yes, you know, this is pretty, this part's cut and dried and it's kind of more subjective and we want to look at it on a broader basis. So we had a great discussion, but we could never come up with a way to really measure that. But we did come to the conclusion that all of us serve on other boards, we're on foundations, we do all these other things that aren't tracked here, but they definitely contribute to our public partnership. You know, we talk about PUD issues at Lions Club, and so anyway, we're all in agreement. I think that we don't need to change this, that it would be impossible to measure it. Thank you.
I could just add one thing to pique your interest. Had some conversations with some of the other mid-seas last week, and I think we're going to propose another meeting of the commissioners before the end of the year on some subjects that I think will be of high interest to you. So we just need to do some more work to describe that, but that will create an opportunity to potentially change that one item.
You're giving us a makeup meeting.
It's like a rotary makeup.
It wasn't the intention, actually, but it turns out it might serve that purpose.
Okay. The next item is financial, maintaining strong financial stewardship. For those not in the audience but might be interested in knowing what that category is, the key indicators, board check for adherence to budgets, long-range plans, guidelines, principles, policies, and acceptable risk levels. The target is 4 quarterly presentations by management, completed on time with satisfactory content. The annual target, therefore, is 4 meetings. So far, we've had 3. We will have another. We are green in that category, and we will have another meeting before the end of the year. Do we want to go through each category here, or just those?
We usually report by exception.
By exception?
Yeah.
All right.
As I scan down through, there's only two that right now are sort of an exception because they're white, and if anybody's been in the boardroom for the last several months, we have been having some minor discussions on our strategic planning goals this year. And I think by the end of the year, that will be very green, maybe even dark green. And our budget is, we're going to talk more about it today, but it's December 2, I believe, is the date that we approve that. So those will both turn green.
Okay.
Could I make a comment, though?
Yes, please.
I was looking through this, and I just want to call out Rebecca for the job that she's doing in capturing a variety of things that's not on our balanced scorecard, the meetings that Ann was talking about. She's been capturing a great number of those in great detail on this list, which gives all of us, I think, a sense of the meetings that we're attending over and above the twice a month here in the boardroom, because there are just a ton of meetings we're going to. So thank you, Rebecca.
So, Commissioner Smith, I will also tell you that in looking at the scorecard matrix and the number of meetings that Rebecca has been able to capture. Rebecca, you want to pull that up for us?
There'd be more if we put them all on our calendar.
There would be. go one more page.
The quarterly.
Or next, one more. There we are.
Yeah. That's.
I got dizzy reading the the print on here as to how many meetings that the commissioners do attend. And like you said, Randy, there's many that are not on this list that just go unaccounted for, but.
Yeah, McKenna and I never get it on our list, our Upper Valley breakfast, those types of things. And sometimes you're capturing them.
Well, I can add them.
May I make a comment about the comment? So it just struck me, I don't know, it's one of those mornings, but it just struck me that I really believe that all of us, all the commissioners, are going to all these meetings because they care and are so passionate about what they're doing. We're not doing it. Not a single one of us are going to meetings because it's something we have to do, and we want to get checked off for going to. It hasn't always been this way.
You say we need a sanity check?
No, I mean we're doing it for the right reason, and as I said, it's not always that way with other commissions, and it hasn't always been that way with this one. So, applauding my colleagues here.
Thank you for that. So I think that, unless there's any further comment on the board balance scorecard, I think that concludes that. We can turn the next discussion topic over to Commissioner Wright, or General Manager. You're a commissioner now. That was easy.
No, thanks. I don't want to be elected. next up, we're going to do the quarterly load update. So Andy Wendell is going to be presenting it.
Hi, Andy.
Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. Great to see you all here. This is the October quarterly update for our electrical loads. Chad Rissman is unable to join us this morning. Normally he'd be here, but he was unable to join us. So today we're just going to give a brief update over the 10-year load forecast. Again, we update this on a regular basis, but we report to the board on a quarterly basis. We will look at an overall overview of active projects that we've seen since January 1st this year. We'll talk about a briefing on the substations. I just wanted to share with you a little bit about Stehekin, some load information that we're gathering in Stehekin. A little bit off topic, but as the idea of this critical area zoning, new ordinances adopted in critical area zoning, I'll talk briefly about that. There is no action requested of the board today, but comments and thoughts are always welcome. And we just wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that we are seeing a lot of new residential connections. And those new residential connections largely are in the multifamily housing areas. This photo here is taken right down here near our headquarters on Pierre Street.
So when we do energize one of these buildings, we're putting in 60 or 80 new meters in each one of these buildings. And what's interesting about that is we look through our load forecasts, we recognize that we're not necessarily seeing an increase in load or a material increase in load associated with our residential units, but we're connecting a lot of new meters. And so we want to talk a little bit about that today. Keep in mind that this multifamily housing, these units generally, each unit consumes about one half of what a typical residential home would consume, just because of the economy of scale, if you will, of the building. But we're seeing, we're connecting a lot of these this year, and we're seeing in the planning horizon a lot more multifamily housing in the county. This slide shows in the blue is residential. It looks back over the, what we call the rolling 12 average annual service additions. And you can see we're at 849. We are projected to go over 1,000 by the end of the year. A lot of those are the multifamily housing. And our commercial sector in red below is, you know, relatively stable. That just kind of ebbs and flows. But certainly the blue line is a demonstration of what we know is the county recognizing there's a housing shortage, and the development community is responding to that. So we're seeing that as well.
Andrew, are those both reflective of net new meters? And my point being, some, you know, people will destroy a building and the meter goes away.
Sure, it's net new.
It is net new.
Yeah, okay. Net new, exactly.
So the commercial has been net new this year, about 60 so far.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So translating that into load, and I want to point out just below the title there, the 10-year load forecast, this is net of energy conservation plans. I just can't overemphasize what a big impact our energy conservation group has on the overall load forecast and actual loads. In particular, energy conservation is having a major impact in the residential sector. And so that is a large reason why we are seeing a high number of new connections in the residential sector, but we're not seeing that translate into necessarily big increases in load for that sector, because energy conservation does net that out to a certain extent. Our load forecast, last time we came back was in June. We provide what we call JAWS, which is a low case, a very high case, and a base case. And you can see since June, we were forecasting around 48 average megawatts over a 10-year average at 2%. And we have reduced that down this year, this September. We've reduced that down to 32 average megawatts, or about 1.3% annual growth rate. The primary driver for that is just the recognition that as we came out of the implementation of policies and rates for the cryptocurrencies and the high-density loads, the adoption of those, we've worked through those pending applications that we had, that list of applications prior to the moratorium timeframe. And we recognize that we likely will not see a large amount of new applications coming in through the cryptocurrencies. That market has shifted somewhat. There's been some stability in that. And so we've translated that into, we believe that we won't see a major increase in applications in that area. That's the primary driver there. So that's a little bit inverse of, hey, we've got a lot of new connections on the residential side, but I think it points to the fact that the cryptocurrency applications also, from a ratio standpoint, we're using much, much more energy than, say, our residential and standard commercial customers.
Andrew, just a quick question. Do you believe that to be the result of the new rate classification for high-density load or the current price of Bitcoin?
In my opinion, I think it's a combination of both for us here locally, but we're also we also have conversations about cryptos through neighboring utilities as well as throughout the region. I think to a large extent, the pricing of the cryptocurrencies, you know, worldwide really is a big driver. However, I think the rates and policies that we put in place have significantly improved our ability to respond and not have the major swings that we were seeing in years past. So,
thank you.
We do have conversations.
Add to that, and just say to, from my APPA contacts, I talked to a lot of folks around the country, and they know that cryptocurrency has been a big issue here. When the prices went up in the spring, many of them saw a pretty dramatic increase in the number of applications that they were getting, and we did not. And I think that would suggest that the pricing and policies have made a difference here.
Thank you.
So on behalf of the load forecast team, we wanted to say thank you for the rates and policies around cryptocurrency, because it has made our forecasting a lot easier. Again, keep in mind we do run a lot of analytics behind these, but also it's somewhat of an instinct where we think we're going to. So that's why we update this on a quarterly basis, is to try to get the best information we can for you. Here is a list of active projects, as I mentioned. I just wanted to point out, too, that in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see it's the energy is in peak in megawatts. And, of course, different from our load forecast, which is looking at energy across our entire system, these individual applications, from an infrastructure standpoint and a planning standpoint, we look at peak energy demand for those, which are different, right, than standard energy. This information is what largely drives the decisions around capital infrastructures. So you can see since June 1st of 2019, we have received a lot of applications for multifamily housing as well as residential developments. Many of those are in the pre-application, meaning folks are coming forward having conversations with us about the size and magnitude of those before they're built. But you can see that the number of these will carry us, and we'll see a lot of this load come to fruition over the next 2 or 3 years as these developments get built out.
May I jump in here, Andrew? So the active projects of NOAC, the surf pool at Slidewaters, pending 3 megawatts. That's a lot of power. It's very seasonal. So how do you, you have to provide that for peak year round, basically. I mean, you have to account for it that way.
Yeah, that's the goal. That's correct. At this point in time, without getting into too much detail, we do have a service level agreement with that particular customer on when they can and can't use that energy, but we know that there's a desire to have that load available year-round, and our planning models are working towards trying to provide that sustained energy in
really?
That particular area.
Is it going to be indoors?
I do not believe it is indoors.
It isn't. Not now. Not in the near future.
Yeah. So, as we've talked about, just looking at the infrastructure that we've been proposing, another substation, South Chelan, infrastructure on the North Shore, Chelan. I'm getting a third feeder out of the existing South Shore substation. All of those capital plans are derivatives of a lot of these applications and the growth in those particular areas. The one that I'd point out there is the Diamond Foundry in North Wenatchee. In June, we were just over a megawatt. Now we're seeing just over 2 megawatts, and so they're continuing to ramp up. That's a pretty sizable load in there. Our load forecast, the reduction somewhat was developed based on just the slower ramping at the Diamond Foundry. However,
I'm sorry, you mean slower than what's actually happening? Or no, you just say it was factored in.
It's just factored in. It's just a slightly slower ramping above that energy than we had originally anticipated back in June. But speaking of the Diamond Foundry, this is a photo that was taken just last week of the substation across on the PUD property that would supply power to the Diamond Foundry and other commercial customers in the area. You can see that active construction going on. second on the list there, that diamond foundry, that civil work, that excavation and civil work and the transformer delivery should be completed by the end of Q4 of 2019, so it's very active. Just moving up on the list, OMI substation, and I want to say thank you again to the board for supporting us on acquiring that additional property adjacent to that substation. That materially improved the engineer's ability to complete a final design, and we will also have a power transformer delivered in the end of Q4 of 2019. The Wenatchee substation, again, thank you for the property support on the property acquisition. We've moved forward with the site planning and the general arrangement there. I had a chance to look at those plans the other day. That's looking really, really good. So by Q4 2019, we should have a site plan completed that allow us to start developing a contract, a bid. Very important substation. The Chelan Gorge South substation, as you know, we've been working on the siting and the outreach associated with that. At this point in time, we're looking at completing a 10% design on the transmission route through the gorge area from Chelan Falls up to the new substation location, and that will help us inform permitting and any conditional use to build that transmission line and that substation as well. On both the North Shore and the South Shore substations, we've entered into a contract with ECI, an engineering consulting firm out of the Seattle and Portland area, to help us finish a general arrangement and community outreach around some of the aesthetics that are desired for those particular substations. And we'll be performing that work in the first quarter of 2020 for North Shore and the second quarter for 2020 on the Leavenworth substation. We're really excited that we have a couple of mobile substations that are to be delivered here soon. I wish they were here today, but they'll be delivered, the first one in Q1 of 2020 and the second one in Q2 in 2020. And those, again, we appreciate the support for those. Those will materially improve our ability to maintain reliability. A community outreach in Stehekin, I think we reported that to you just after September, when we were up there with Commissioner McKenna and our conservation team. Again, we had a lot of great information that came out of that. We're continuing to work on that effort. What I did want to bring forward today is just help you understand that we were fortunate enough to get some new metering equipment installed at the Stehekin Hydro Plant, and this is an example of the information that we're getting, which is really helping us understand the magnitude of the issues for us. In this graph on the left shows a kilowatt in kW demand. And then on the bottom are hours. This is over a 7-day period from October 3 through October 10. The blue graph is showing the hydro operation in kW, and you can see that it's kind of bounces up throughout the day. It bounces up and down, but it's running right at what we would expect around that 160, 170 kilowatt hours. It is being supplemented, however, by the D2, what we refer to as D2, is the small diesel generator that runs, it synchronizes with the hydro. And you can see that D2 on the graph on the bottom, it's essentially starting and stopping and supplementing demand, customer demand throughout the day. In fact, in most cases, multiple times a day. So this information is very valuable for us because we can start looking at the very specific time. In fact, within 5-minute increments, we could look at the time that those are starting and try to understand what loads are being demanded at those particular times.
Have you asked the question, maybe you have, I'm looking at that start and stop cycle, and I'm sure we've got engineers that could answer the question, what does this frequency of starting and stopping that diesel do to the longevity of the generator itself?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we're trying to understand that as well. Early indicators suggest that, well, just like a car, you're having to do more maintenance on it more frequently, changing the oils, making sure your contacts, your relays are working properly. So we are seeing an increase in maintenance there. We're trying to get our arms around what that entire scope looks like in terms of increased costs. But I think what we're looking at here is that we can see that we have a much higher dependency on the diesel generator. And as we know that loads are growing in Sahikan, we know that we can't depend on this diesel generator for the long term. So we've got some decisions to make. And I know we'll be talking a little bit more about that. The good news is that we've got engineers and techs that were able to get this information or this metering equipment installed and significantly helping us. One thing that would improve this information is advanced metering in that particular area, and we may need to look at advancing advanced metering in Sahikan to pinpoint some of these loads.
Andrew?
Yes.
Is there a, I know we deal with ecology on this in terms of fish in Company Creek. Is there an air resources board? Does ecology handle that in this state? Do they manage the air resources?
I'm
just thinking in terms of the diesel generator giving off, you know, diesel fumes.
Yeah, I'm not certain as to who oversees the permitting for the large diesel generators in Sahikan. I do know that diesel generation, at least in the city of Wenatchee, is overseen by the Department of Ecology, right, as far as the emissions controls. So I would assume that it is the same, but I don't see Michelle in the audience, but I can get that information. Oh, do you know Michelle? Is it? Yeah, Department of Ecology. Yeah.
Have we bumped up?
Yeah, that is defined within our permit.
So we have to stay within certain levels, and we've been able to do that even with the increased dependence on the diesel generator.
Just for the record, I want to make sure that it's heard that Michelle answered yes to both those questions.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Michelle. So with that, that covers the 10-year load forecast, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, questions?
Beautiful photo.
It is. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, I need to say that I think initially we're going to talk about critical area zoning, and it looks like we pulled that information. I apologize for not reconciling that in the agenda. Critical area zoning is just a refocus of the municipalities mandated by the state of Washington to adopt or revise critical area zoning. Critical area zoning are things like geosensitive areas, wildlife, wetland areas. We wanted to mention that because part of growth in Chelan County is subject to critical area zoning. And the PUD has been working with municipalities, in particular recently Chelan, Leavenworth, and Wenatchee, to adopt new critical area zones. And we've been successful in maintaining an exemption for utilities to own, operate, and continue to own, operate, and maintain any utility infrastructure, fiber, water, power, wastewater, that is located in critical areas. And allow us to expedite maintenance and repairs. However, on new construction, what we call greenfield construction, the utility would be subject to the new critical area zoning as anybody else building in those particular areas. It's just of note, we just wanted you to know that we're working with those municipalities to maintain those exemptions where we can. Okay.
Is Sahikan a critical area zone?
Absolutely. Within Chelan County, there are critical areas, shorelines, slope stability areas, certainly wildlife habitat.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Good. Okay. Andrew.
So are we going to tie this in with the next item? And
yep.
Same while he's
here. Okay. Yeah. I think the thought here was that to allow Commissioner McKenna to lead this next discussion, and Andy would stay in case there are any questions that come up around so he can.
Well, one, it was a remarkable trip for me, learning trip, and I wanted to thank Andy and Josh and Marine Group who transported us, and it was a rough day on the water, and they got us up there safely, and I really appreciated that. But it was a For me, it was a great learning opportunity. I've been up to Stehekin for years and really never looked at the electrical system like you guys were able to open my eyes up and increase my learning on this trip. And I kind of came away with a better understanding of what you're doing and kind of the alarms that you're trying to set off to prevent problems coming up, reaching that maximum. We're bumping up against that. Those diesels are coming on. And being able to talk to individuals up there, both residents, visitors, and park employees. And it really challenged me to think about, as a commission and as a PUD, what are the things that we can do? In the immediate, Josh, I really appreciated your education. You guys are meeting load up there by the conservation efforts, and that's going to last for a while, but it becomes really apparent to me that that's not going to last forever, and we really have to look at some solutions up there. I think from my standpoint, there became an opportunity, and I wanted to present this to my fellow commissioners, that there are some disconnects. Sitting there talking to park employees and listening to the plan for the fire dorm construction and things that are happening there, that's going to push the system even more. Something new I hadn't seen before, the electric bikes down at the landing. And while you guys were outside working, I was kind of inside drinking coffee and eating cinnamon rolls. But it was a great time to visit with people that I know up there and really just sit down and have coffee with them and what are your concerns. And I got to visit with one of the electricians, for example, that has a cabin up there that comes up and does a lot of work on the weekends for people. And what I didn't understand is, just like down in Manson and Lake Chelan and Leavenworth and other places where Airbnb and the vacation industry is impacting cities, it's impacting Stehekin as well. People are from outside of the area are buying up cabins, building new cabins. They're putting in multi-units. They're putting in heat pumps. Because their customers are wanting air conditioning, and they want on-demand heat instead of a fireplace, and the electrician that I talked to said, well, I'm not putting in natural gas for hot water tanks. We're putting in electricity, and he hadn't thought about putting in natural gas, and natural gas freaked him out, but the reality is, we need to put in gas hot water tanks. We need, and the other thing that really struck me is the opportunity, I'm thinking as a commissioner, well, what can I do? It became really apparent to me, commissioners, that we really need to ask not just the Parks Department people that are up there. We need to, I'm promoting that we have a sit-down meeting with the National Parks policymakers over on the coast, and say we're gonna come to a head as a PUD up there where we're not gonna have any choice but to put a moratorium and stop things and stop growth and do anything like that up there, because we won't be able to produce the electricity to provide it unless we're all working together in advance to do things like putting in gas hot water tanks, and doing something that Ann is aware of this from living in Manson, that years ago there, the Parks Department changed a policy. A new superintendent comes in, changes the policy, and all of a sudden people can't go out and get firewood to heat their houses. And so the demand for electricity is going up. And we need to sit down and talk about what the Park Department is doing up there as well, and their policies that they're setting not only for themselves but for the community up there. That, you know, how can we set some policies that are basically going to be guaranteed, that they're not going to be changed at a whim, and that people can count on getting firewood for their wood stoves. And that may sound like a strange, for those of us who live down here, that policy up there is vital, and it's going to be vital for us as a PUD to be able to continue providing electricity. So I would like to, as a commissioner, promote the idea that we invite, or we go over there with staff, and really, you know, I think it really has to do with education. Of letting people understand where we're heading and what we need to do, and we need them to commit to some policies that people can count on. You know, so that's my point. It was just an eye-opening experience, and yet I've lived just down the road from there for 20 years, and I still was not completely aware of everything that was going on and the challenges that are faced up there. So again, thank you, Andy. It was a great opportunity, and I think there's some things that we can do to help support staff here in making a difference for that community in the future. Just a thought.
Oh, I think that's a good idea. Having lived on the lake and gone to Stehekin my whole life, every summer, the Park Service is going to, I mean, I've just watched them from the time they first came in there. They're going to encourage more and more and more restriction. They don't want development. They don't want more people coming and using facilities. I mean, so I'm not sure, you know, where we're going to fit in that spectrum. But I do know what I've watched the Park Service do forever, and it's more regulation, it's less use, it's you know, stricter zoning, that sort of thing. So going in, we need to be aware of that, or, you know, recognize that. But I totally understand. I've been surprised to see I'm not sure who regulates all of that, but to see the Airbnbs and that kind of a thing happening in Stehekin.
That's county.
I think it is county. I think it is county. And so we need to not just talk to the Park Service. We need to bring the county in for sure. We need to really look into it.
The political side of this, and I've observed this for a long time, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, because I think we have the unique opportunity around electricity to bring all the parties together and talk and do what's right. Because you got Parks Department buying up property and, you know, trying to, you know, and the community up there feeling like the Parks Department tells us what to do and we want to be independent. I don't want to have to deal with any of that. I just want to say everybody that's up there has electricity, and it's an issue, and we don't want to put a moratorium, so let's all get together, cooperate, and solve some problems so that we can meet the needs. I think it's a unique opportunity.
I do too. And you know, you're right that I'm not sure where the county comes down when you're talking about it within the Park Service. Certainly when you get out to the wilderness area, which is up the road maybe 20 miles, the county has no say there. That's all federal. But I think that's a great idea. We need to all get together and figure out how we're going to deal with this.
I think we need to be cautious that we don't end up getting used as a foil for the Park Service for their desire to restrict development.
which is exactly where they will go, yeah. I believe too.
Yeah, those are great points. We heard from the Park Service. We also heard from a lot of the private property owners and the private businesses in the area. We understand that there's over 300 acres in Stehekin that's privately owned, and many of those folks want to see that become developed, whether they're building guest houses or other commercial buildings. So there is a difference in perspectives from the Park Service to the private property owners.
Absolutely.
I agree with you, Commissioner McKinnon. It'd be nice to not be in the middle of that. I just like to hear the term that we as a utility, we respond to growth. We don't promote it nor discourage it, but we respond to that. And the difficulty here is that responding to just a little bit more growth in Stehekin is translating into some real challenges for us with the limited capacity that we have, with the infrastructure that we have that I've shown you on the graphs. I can tell you that right now, our folks, our energy management folks in our energy management group, as well as engineering over in distribution, they're working very hard to try to understand what the entire spectrum of options that we have to be responsive to this increased demand. And there's no easy solution. There's no one silver bullet. It's a wide spectrum of a lot of different things that we're working at. We're trying to bring together that list of options forward to our senior management, including our general manager. And I think that there's been a desire to have that conversation with the Park Service independently as well. So we are working on those. And we're probably not moving at the pace that's giving you comfort. Got a lot of things going on, and Stehekin has kind of snuck in on us in terms of all the important things that we're working on. But it is starting to elevate to be a higher priority for us, given the data that we're getting. So we're running that system really close to the edge.
How about if we take an assignment to think through, there are some strategic issues here as well, and want to be thoughtful about those in terms of how we approach others. But take an assignment for developing an approach to get to both the county and the National Park Service, and we'll bring it back and have a conversation with you about that. That'll give us a chance to think through what some of the options are and candidly how this might play out too, what some of the issues are that may come up, and allow you to think some about that too in terms of the relationships that you want up there and how you want to be positioned for it.
And Steve, I might add, I'd be curious to at least understand what the potential options are that are being considered.
Yep. So, good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that'll be part of that conversation. What are the? It'll center around how do we provide electric service and under different scenarios of load growth in particular.
Just one more comment. Some of you are probably aware that the Park Service owns the property just about 11 miles down the lake to just above Lucerne. Most of you know where Lucerne is. And then at Lucerne, then it becomes Forest Service property. And the Park Service has taken back, there are cabins on the lake that are on long-term leases, 100-year leases, 80-year leases, and the Park Service has taken all those back. And they've moved the people out and said, you have to move out by a certain date, and you have to remove everything, bring it back to the original condition of the property. Below that, the Forest Service has a whole different approach to it, and they have not moved anybody out, and they're letting people maintain their leases, and so that's what they're doing. That's how they've moved in the last 5 years.
Interesting.
Yeah. It seems like to me that we ought to be, perhaps as an organization, looking at the development of a comprehensive energy policy for this rural or isolated type of a situation that would encompass all energy uses in the area and potential development, and it'll be able to weigh in on what type of water heaters, what type of heat demand, what type of, and set those as a governance policy and, promote the well-being of Stehekin, but not be the slave of the Parks Department or any other perhaps outside developer, but have our own independent policy where people would have to come and check in on that, because it's just going to get a higher and higher demand rather than lesser.
So I want to suggest a slight amendment to that, because I think that's generally the path that we're going down, Commissioner Bowles. But pretty much every technical problem can be solved with money. The question is, how much money? And then does that translate through into rates? So I think what we can do is create some options in terms of this path creates this kind of impact, and another path creates a different kind of impact. So there are choices that could lead to requirements or restrictions that we might put into place, but we have a thoughtful conversation about whether we want to go down that path or not, and present the community even with some choices about what the options might be. I think we can do some good work for you on that.
Yeah, I'd like us not to be in a reactive mode.
Fair enough. I think that makes sense.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Good presentation. And Steve, the next topic.
Okay. Next up, we want to get back to 2020 budget targets and major assumptions. You recall we're in the annual process here. So this is the meeting where we talk about what the key budget assumptions will be. We're not going to get into the budget numbers yet. That comes at the next board meeting. But we're building towards that decision in early December with respect to the 2020 budget. Mark Mullins will present.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mark Mullins, Director of Planning, Risk, and Analytics, and I'm here to kick off the 2020 budget process. So there's no board action required today. We will cover the purpose, timeline, guidelines, and assumptions, and our next steps associated with the 2020 budget process. So we just got done completing the strategic plan, which is a five-year look, and the associated business plans for the same period, 2020 to 2024. So this budget process is now transitioning to focusing on that first year of that business plan, which is 2020. So we have a continuous planning cycle throughout the organization. You're very familiar with the top part of this slide, given that we've just completed some of these steps. The strategic plan, as you know, we do this every 5 years, but we do a rolling approach every year for our five-year business plans. So with the completion of the strategic plan that resulted in four primary goals under seven objectives, you've heard about our district-wide priorities to support that strategic plan. And then the business plan and the operating unit plans that are associated with that describes all of the things that we're going to do to support that strategic plan. So we're here today focusing in on the 2020 annual budget, and this presentation is very high level. All the details will follow. But we do convert that information over to a district-wide annual performance plan that you're familiar with. You see that quarterly when we provide updates, and we also develop our specific detailed department plans and individual performance plans throughout the organization. The intent is really to ensure that everybody's aligned, focusing on the right things, and resources are matched up in the right places. So this process is beneficial towards making that successful. So our budget timeline, on October 7th is when you saw the final business plans presented to the board. We are at the kickoff stage and we'll provide an overview of that process. We'll have two public hearings in November, November 4th and November 18th. Craig Koontz will be providing those details. And then we'll have come back to the board on December 2nd and request approval of that budget. So our strategic focus, the 2020 budget is really built around everything that we've been working on throughout the course of the year with the strategic plan, but also the associated business plans that were presented on October 7th. Consistent with past years, at the top of our balanced scorecard is customer owner satisfaction. This really is the foundation of all of our strategic initiatives. As you know, we developed four strategic goals, and all of the district initiatives identified through the business planning process, and specifically for 2020, are designed to support those strategic plan goals. I won't go through this in detail because this is a slide that you're all familiar with, given we've just finished up the strategic planning process. But things that you'll be hearing about in the next few weeks, actually over the next month, will certainly support these strategic plan goals. with any good comprehensive planning cycle, we always want to recognize, and you heard from some of the managing directors and their operating plans, that we do have a lot of known unknowns. So as we go through our business planning process, those things rise to the top, and we want to consider those in not only developing the initiatives to support our business plans, but also recognize that things happen along the way that could change our plans. And when that happens, we come back to the board and reprioritize and ensure that we're aligned and keeping things on track. But we are going to be focusing on investments and projects that provide the highest long-term customer owner value. To be successful, we require aligned resources across the district, but we also require third-party vendors and contracts and so forth that to make it successful, we all need to collaborate and ensure that we stay on track. On the wholesale energy market, things continue to evolve. This isn't new, but we are seeing some signs of improvement. Energy prices are slightly better. Over the last five-year strategic planning period, we saw those prices decline over time, but we are seeing some signs of improvement, particularly on the carbon value of our resources here. So that'll continue to evolve, and we need to be able to react as those things change. In the business planning presentations, you also saw technology roadmaps to address not only the IT infrastructure needs and ensuring that we're prepared for the cybersecurity needs that is constantly changing and evolving, but also that we're leveraging technology to provide good value for our customer owners. And looking at the data associated with that really helps drive operational performance and decision making. System load growth. You heard Andy speak today about the load growth. This is one that we think we can do a pretty good job at having a pretty good assessment of what happens in the near term, but certainly things can change over time as we get large load requests. The Diamond Foundry is a good example, but also an entire new market like cryptocurrency. So we have to be able to adapt when those things change as well. You've heard about this in the past, but during the last insurance renewal process, we learned that the insurance markets are hardening. Some premium uncertainty, particularly on the liability insurance coverage, so that's something that we're going to build into our budget assumptions, recognizing that we may have some increases coming forward. So a lot of these are just a few examples. Obviously, a lot of things impact our plan, but we just wanted to recognize that we do have some external indicators that we're recognizing. Our 2020 budget that we'll propose will be meeting our district financial policy metrics. These are similar to what you've seen in the past. I do want to recognize that our liquidity target is close to $200 million. The policy requires us to hold $175 million, or according to the methodology, if it's greater, whatever that number is. In this case, it's greater than $198 million for 2020. And this is just a reflection of the increasing O&M and capital plans that we have. And it also adjusts up or down with our risk profile as well.
Mark, if I look at liquidity and I look at days cash, is that inclusive or exclusive of each other?
No, they are related.
Okay.
They are related. The 250 days cash on hand is representative of what we think a AA entity would look like from a rating agency perspective. And that $175 million is consistent with that.
Okay, thank you. Yep.
So key budget assumptions on the wholesale revenue side, we do forecast based on average water. We know that that can change as we've experienced during this year. But we do forecast on average water and current outage impacts based on our modernization and maintenance schedules. We also look at the current forward prices for energy and also what we've know about the carbon market, that where we've seen some improvements. And also want to note that our hedge program is fully implemented in 2020 as well. On the system load growth side, we're just under 4% for 2020, a little bit higher than what Andy presented on an annual growth for a 10-year look, but we are seeing some impacts of the Diamond Foundry ramping up. So that accounts for really over half of our total growth rate of conservation. On the retail electric side, organic growth is just under 1% at this time. For water and wastewater, and new fiber installs are all consistent with what we've seen in the past in terms of system load growth. No surprises there. I do want to point out on the business line service revenues, this is consistent with our 2020 through 2024 strategic plan. We do have some placeholders in our forecast starting in 2021 for rate increases for the electric, water, wastewater, and fiber, all of our business lines. The reason we selected 2021 is because we still need to determine when those rates increases will go into effect, so there's more work to be done. But putting in 2021 as a starting point helps just build a conservative forecast there. On the labor bargaining unit, we have a 3% assumption effective April 1st, 2020, per the collective bargaining agreement. On the non-bargaining unit side, our human resources continually looks at the market data, and that does inform the budget process as we go through time, but we do have some assumptions currently in our forecast at this time. For the long-term cost-plus contracts, similar as what we've had in the past, we are expecting to max those assumptions out. We are fully utilizing those funds to support the work that we have at the hydros. On the capital and operating expenditures, as you've seen in the business planning, we put together a plan that supports the strategic plan, but in 2020 we see expenditures really focused on continuation of the Rock Island modernization, work at Rocky Reach with the large units, but also on the distribution infrastructure, where we have substations planned, but also creating resiliency in that business line. And we also have a lot of work regarding facilities with the service center and at both hydros as key drivers. We are continuing to reduce debt by $39 million through our net scheduled principal payments, and assuming our interest earnings will be at 2.61% for the year. And we will continue the public power benefit as we get into that annual process where we designate the funding level, and then as those projects are designated, then we'll come back with the budget revisions as the board selects those items that we'll focus on. So next steps, we'll continuing to develop the budgeting. We're right in the middle of that process. You will be hearing all the details on November 4th and November 18th as we get into our public hearings, where you'll have a good chance to do a comprehensive review of the all the financial numbers as well. And we will come back on December 2nd requesting board approval. Any questions?
Commissioners, questions, comments? I guess not. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Good presentation.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Next up, we've been having an ongoing conversation about fire hardening activities. And so I want to invite Steve Wickel to come up and talk about some of the things that we have ongoing, the primary one of which has to do with hardening for the Chelan-Manson 115 kV transmission line. But we'll also talk a little bit about some of the other associated activities associated with fire hardening.
Good morning. I'm Steve Wickel, Transmission Engineering Manager.
I'm Jenna Rum, Customer Outreach.
I'll let you take it.
All right. So just a little quick background on this project. So the 2015 to 19 strategic plan, our customer owners identified that they were interested in replacing or rerouting electric lines to help protect from fire and weather damage. And then also our 2018 to 22 district-wide business plan included hardening transmission systems to protect against fire and weather. So in 2017, HDR conducted a study of our system and identified the Chelan-Manson and Chelan-Wapato transmission lines in the top four projects for fire risk. And about a year ago in September, this project was proposed to the board to harden the transmission system on the Chelan-Manson line between Chelan Falls and Union Valley. Since that time, we've done a pretty extensive community outreach in the Chelan area to explain the need for this project and to get some feedback or general feelings from the community about this project. We've sent a couple of postcards to all of the residents in town. We've coupled this project outreach with the substation down in the Gorge area, so really wanting to make sure we get it in front of everybody and that they understand that we're proposing this and trying to move forward. We've held a couple of drop-in sessions as well as a stakeholder luncheon to really work with specific key stakeholders in town to explain the need for the project and solicit feedback. We've also sent some targeted postcards to about 150 customers that are right there along that transmission route, roughly a mile on either side. We've done updates to the city council, and we also included information at events like the Earth Day booth that we have up there in Chelan. And then most recently in June, we sent a letter specifically to that 150 customers along the line with a little more detail about the project and next steps. That letter, we made a promise to come back to them when we had a 30% design and a little bit more information about the three alternatives that we're looking at. And so that's actually where we are today. We've completed a 30% design and we're ready to go back to the stakeholders with this information. Oh, yeah.
Is this on?
So just real quick, I just wanted to give a brief overview of the three options. Chelan Falls Dam down here. Here's the transmission line, of course, that goes up. Union Valley is the farthest away. It's up here by the hospital. That's one option, is to actually redo and steel every structure up to there. We have Chelan Substation, which is right here behind the Walmart. One of the options was to only go to that point. And then there are these kind of red and blue structures. These were deemed more critical structures. They might be harder to get to. Maybe they're three-pole angled structures. They're just more costly. And if a fire were to go through, at least maybe those would be done in steel, and it would at least speed up the recovery. So those were kind of the three options that we had. We did complete the 30% design, so we're ready to go out and stake where these are on the property, where the guy wires will go. Some structures are taller, some structures are shorter, some have moved a little bit more to accommodate maintenance or any other kinds of things. So that's where we're at right now. I wanted to give a brief overview.
And so the next steps that we're proposing to sort of keep our stakeholders in the loop about this as it progresses is to send another letter here in a couple of days to that same stakeholder group, about 150 of them, just following up with these 30% design details, providing them a map and a little bit more context about what we're planning to do. Also in late October, we would send a postcard that I think you have a sample of in your packet. And that would just go to, there's approximately 25 property owners who actually have pole structures on their property. And we would send this postcard to them to explain to them what the different stakes mean. There's different colors for the guy wires and for the pole itself. And just to encourage them to go out and look at the stakes and follow up with us if they have any concerns or questions about the locations. And then we would do another informational drop-in session sometime in November to present both the 30% design details and sort of talk through the three alternatives in which we might be presenting as our preferred alternative. Oh, we've also got an update to the city council scheduled for November 26th, just to give a high-level update on this project as well as the substation by the gorge.
So I was asked to put in a little bit about fire response and mitigation. I know there's been questions about, you know, current events, especially in California. Where we are right now at Chelan PUD with our fire response and mitigation, we're not doing public safety power shutoff right now, and there's really no plan to do so. We've had some questions from, you know, customers on that. Currently, what we are doing, and this isn't everything, but we do have extensive models of all of our transmission lines to be designed in accordance with the National Electric Safety Code. This seems to make sense, and maybe is kind of a duh. They should be designed that way, but it took a lot of work to get all the models in place, all the LIDAR, the flights with the helicopters, et cetera, and that extensive modeling. So that was a huge improvement on our system, and that started in 2010, and that's been completed on our transmission system. We do pole test and treat on our all of our poles. It's an annual program on a 10-year cycle. We do the painting and the grubbing around the poles. That's on a 5-year cycle, but we do a section of our lines every year. We turn off automatic reclosing right now, currently on the transmission system, on the one line that goes up over Stevens Pass. Heavily treed, lots of faults, and a high risk of starting a fire at that point in time on reclosing. I shouldn't say a high risk of. It's just if there were a fault and it didn't clear, we don't want to energize the line again back into a fault and have that energy, you know, potentially start a fire. So we turn that reclosing off. We postpone maintenance during high fire conditions. We do next day studies. The transmission planning engineers do next day studies that address whether or not the next day is going to be a red flag or a high fire danger so that everybody's aware. We have real-time displays for the system operators on when it's a red flag condition. From that, we actually, when they are in a red flag condition, we do line inspections by servicemen prior to re-energizing if it doesn't automatically reclose on other sections that we haven't turned the reclosing off. We do annual helicopter inspections, the vegetation management. So we do quite a bit for fire response and mitigation here at Chelan PUD. Future improvements, we are evaluating disabling automatic reclosing on our distribution circuits. So that would be a big impact to customers. That last bullet is it would likely extend outage times when reclosing is disabled. So that's a future possibility. Any questions?
Commissioners, questions, comments?
substantially more, greater premiums for insurance today, and that's an exposure for us. So this is trying to, the risk is changing on us here, and we're trying to understand that, make sure we manage to that. And there's some places that we are definitely considering going that respond to increased risk on our system.
I might suggest that there's additional risk that we need to investigate if we decide to move to a system-wide non-reclosing, that there might be impacts to individuals using medical equipment that require electricity to operate that medical equipment. So there are risks in both directions that we need to investigate. Okay, thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
That's actually what we had for the morning session. I'm kind of amazed we're within 3 minutes of the scheduled time that we had. what we would like to do now is propose that we move to executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101-I.
Okay. And how much time? 30 minutes?
30 minutes. Yeah.
So we will be going into executive session for 30 minutes. All right. We are coming out of executive session. It's October 21st, 2019. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned. Good afternoon and welcome to the October 21st, 2019 business session of the Chelan County PUD Commission. I'd like to remind everyone to please take this opportunity to silence any electronic devices you may have with you. And since we place such great value on public input at our meetings, and since the meetings are recorded, if you wish to address any agenda item, please step to the microphone, state your name, your address. And if you'd be kind enough to please limit your comments to 3 minutes so that others could have an opportunity, that would be appreciated. So we're moving on, and currently we're at the consent agenda. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I move approval of the consent agenda.
Okay. It's moved. Is there a second?
second on the consent agenda? Dennis? Yeah. Oh, didn't hear you that. Sorry, Dennis. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it. Steve, we'll move on to the regular agenda now.
Okay, we're up to item 16, a resolution approving turbine repairs and schedule changes under contract number 0401, part B for the Rock Island B5 through B10 rehabilitation project with Andres Hydro Corporation, and approving execution of field work order change orders number 25 for B10, 04-08 for B7, 5-05 for B5, and 4-09 for purchase of 3 additional sets of trunnion bushings. Kirk Hudson, Brett Bickford are here to present.
Good afternoon. Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission.
Good afternoon. Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management.
You might recall we've had a number of ongoing issues with the Powerhouse One modernization efforts, both technical and project management. The issues that you might be most aware of are the B9 Kaplan pipe failure we had, as well as the B9 vibration issues that we reported back to the board on several weeks ago, as well as some parts coming loose on the B9 and B10 hubs. We worked with Andres closely. We actually asked them to do a root cause analysis on the B9 vibration issues. They gave us access to their best technical staff. We were mostly satisfied with their root cause analysis and their proposed fixes for the technical solutions. We've also identified the need for Andres to close some gaps on project management approach, both the approach of managing the projects and staffing on site at the project. To this point, we really appreciate the changes Andres has made on the management reporting structure. We're still awaiting some changes to be made in improving and increasing staffing on the project. We also appreciate the efforts they've made to share in some of the costs for the technical solution, recognizing there's ownership there on their part. The resolution you have in front of you, which Brett will get into details shortly, is the next step in implementing the technical solution for fixed pricing that reflects their shared responsibility and a schedule that demonstrates their commitment to address the project management concerns we've identified with them. And with that, I'll turn it over to Brett to share the details and the benefits of the resolution on taking these next steps with these units.
On field work order number 25, that's for unit B10, the benefits of executing this field work order now is that it allows Andres to participate in the repair costs with the district. It will allow work to start immediately on shop repairs, which will allow the unit to be brought back as soon as possible, which can be as early as March of 2020. Doing the work on this will help free up floor space and dewatering equipment for other units. It also gives us the opportunity to kind of test incrementally a set of repair solutions that we need to have to make decisions about how we repair B9 and B6. Also allows Andres to employ their new project site team now, as opposed to waiting for the future for long lead parts, and allows the district to help evaluate the effectiveness of that management team, with not only just skiing on schedule, but they also have to manage quality and safety at the same time. The benefits that we see for our next field work order, which is 408 for unit B7, is in this solution, we're going to go ahead and test another important element of the bushings. That's a long lead item. There'd be about 6 months downtime on being able to get field work started. So again, B10 can start now and fill in that gap. We're going to go ahead and cap unit B7, which means we're going to allow it to be watered up. We're going to put a steel plate over the head cover. It can be watered up, and then we can take head gate stop logs and pumps from that unit, and we can move them over to unit B5. So the field work order 505 is for B5. That revises the schedule to have that work start in November of this year. The benefits of that are that in this resolution, in this field work order, we're going to reconcile 2 years of escalation on that unit. So it's been standing and waiting for about 2 years for work to start. We had pricing that was scheduled for 2 years ago, so we're reconciling that escalation in pricing. And then it stops that escalation because we're starting work now. That will allow us, that unit's out of service, and currently would be out of service unless we spent considerable money and time to doing kind of an interim repair, which then would be kind of washed away when it comes time to actually do the rehabilitation. So we want to start that now, get it back on sooner, and again, stop the escalation on that. The fourth field work order would allow us to buy the rest of the bushings that we think might be necessary for these units. We can use those as spares for the future. What we also are allowed to do with that, those is we already have unit B8 is already manufactured, and so that allows the opportunity for those bushings, if we decide that's the preferred fix, to have those changed out before there's even a unit outage, so we can make as fast as possible change with that. The cost for each unit to do these changes is about $1.5 million out of each unit's budget, which right now is about $31 million. Any questions?
Commissioners, any discussion, comments, questions? No? All right.
I think it's important to note publicly, probably no comments from the commissioner is equivalent to the fact that staff has done and management has done a great job in terms of educating us to the issues and the negotiations and where we now, you know, reside in terms of this resolution. So our silence is not because we don't care or don't know. It's because we do care and we do know. So thank you very much. You know, really appreciate the prep.
That's an excellent point. Commissioner Bowles, is that the staff has done a great job keeping commissioners informed all the way along throughout this process. So this is not news to the commission. We're aware of the process of discussion and the repair of these turbines along the way. So that's why there isn't greater discussion. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our only agenda item for today.
Okay.
The regular agenda.
I would move approval of Resolution 16.
Second. Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, we'll move on to manager items.
Just have a couple today. I want to invite Terry Wendell and Mark O'Brien up to talk about the customer information system project. They're going to give you an update. We're getting close, and there's a lot of activity right now. you're looking at some fairly stressed folks, although they keep delivering. So we'll hope we can keep that up.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
Yeah. I made the mistake of making the assignment so John made.
I'll kick this off. So as Steve said, we're here today to give you an update of the CIS project, customer information system, that we have been installing and working on for a couple years now, actually, by the time we first started looking into this system. This project has been focusing on technical aspects as well as functional. We currently have shifted the focus more toward the end user, the owners, the functional team carries the lead on the district side of that effort. Again, my name is Mark O'Brien. I'm the technical project manager, and Kerry Wendell, functional lead, customer service manager as well. And so I'm going to turn it over to her, and she's going to kind of give you a high-level look of kind of where we've been, where we're currently at, and kind of where we're going related to the focus of the project.
Okay. Good afternoon, actually. First of all, I just want to give out a thank you to you all for supporting us last Monday. We were able to close the office and we did a training, so it worked out really good. Everyone feels a little bit more comfortable now that we got that first one out of the way, so thank you for supporting that. So right now we are in the, we're finishing up our second iteration of the system integration testing, and with that we're testing, we're running through the system and billing all 20 cycles of our bills and running all of our interfaces. So we're finishing that up this week. And then the next week we start our third iteration. So this is the critical one. We have to pass this one.
to move into the next phase. So after system integration is finished, then we move into the user acceptance testing. With that, all the users will start getting into the system and running their day in the life of, and running all their processes to make sure everything works. And that's scheduled out through the end of December. In the middle of this and this, we'll have more advanced training that will come up between the week of November 4th through the 12th. So there'll be more advanced training coming in too. So everything overlaps. There's a lot going on. Everyone is super busy. And then we have two mock go-live dates. So December 2nd will be our first one, and then January 6th will be our second one. When we run through this one on January 6th, that's going to give us a really, well, this first one's going to give us a really good idea if we're ready. And then we'll learn from that. And then on January 6th, we'll be able to really know if we're going to go live on the due date. So that's where we are with that. So as you can see, this schedule is very, very tight in the next few months. So things have to go really well. Along with that, we're still trying to maintain our levels of service that we do in our office. So it's been a challenge. We're starting to feel that challenge here in the last few weeks. You might start to see that our lines are longer out front. The building time, it's peak time for building. We have a high number of disconnects this time of the year because we have a lot of people from the summer that maybe haven't paid all summer, and they're hitting that threshold. Hmm. And then also that possibility of the Chelan and Leavenworth offices. We're looking, you know, there's chances of those offices being closed for training, testing as well, maybe a little more frequently. And then just our response time for internal things. So there's a lot of small things that are kind of big things, you know, like just some of our newsletters, some of our public records requests. We have a lot of those little areas that you may see some delays, but we're trying and we'll get it done.
Thanks, Carrie.
May I jump in? So for Carrie. So did you make those beautiful posters just for so the old commissioners with bad eyes could see them? I'm impressed.
Well, actually, Tanya downstairs made them. I just told her we need color in our room downstairs. And I gave her the dates, and she just put them together. So
hopefully you can use them for other.
Well, especially the first one. When I saw sit schedule, I looked around the room. We're all sitting.
We're on time.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
One thing I'd add, in addition to what Carrie mentioned today, is really the impacts from other departments outside of hers. As we move into these testing phases, it's critical that other departments engage in a really timely, effective manner. These schedules are tight, and so we've had really good support. Examples will be from finance, with accounting, accounts payable, treasury, as well as conservation. Those are kind of the two leads that have pretty tight connection to our customer-facing system, and so those entities will continue to have to support this project, sometimes with 2, 3, 4 people from those departments dedicated during those testing phases. So we appreciate their support and just identify that that will continue to be needed as we go forward. So
did I miss it, or did you tell us what your anticipated go-live date is?
Well, we've been keeping that secret because we might change it. No, I'm
not.
We're targeting the weekend, January 20th is the Monday. We hope to go live. So we get past the holidays. We do our final, as Carrie mentioned, our final mock transfer over early January. And then on the 20th, we should be on the new system. So that's the current schedule we have.
Okay. And what should we as customers be looking for? They've
forwarded all my bills to you. So you look for that.
Yeah, I think the initial push out of the billing system should be relatively invisible to the end customer. We go through a third party as far as our bill print, and that's the primary communication for most of those customers. We do hope after the system stabilizes, so we anticipate a few months of stabilizing it, getting people more adjusted to working in the system, that'll be more efficient and enable other attributes that we can leverage going forward. AMI would be a project that this would leverage as well. Not a whole lot. There may be some short-term disturbances in customer service, as Gary mentioned. And once we go live, there's always small things that come up. And so there'll be probably be anticipated impacts to customer service. But the actual services we provide will be, remain relatively consistent.
But I want to add to that that we're very focused on trying to hit the schedule because schedule relates to cost. And we want to try to make sure that we manage this to budget and cost. But we also feel like the direction from the board is clear that if there is a significant problem that customers would experience, that we get that fixed before we go forward. So we understand clearly that we have to achieve both goals, three goals, schedule, cost, and quality.
Any other questions?
So, Mark, so you get this up and running, mm-hmm. make sure that it's stable, and you talked about attributes and bringing AMI, preparing for that. Mm-hmm. And then does that also, where does the end user be able to then start accessing more information for their
right.
their benefit?
Yeah, they'll still have similar access to they do now, to look at their bill or make payments online, things like that. But the additional information really will follow once we go to the advanced metering solution. Mm-hmm. So the data they have currently access to, it's limited in the portal, but most likely we'll push that portal type of engagement forward as we roll out AMI. Mm-hmm. So I don't see a lot of changes. There could be some changes in providers. As we get that new solution in place, maybe we can leverage that and get a different, more enhanced customer engagement portal. But that's yet to be determined.
So unfortunately, we're a couple of years away
yeah.
from that big change.
Right.
But I think one of the important things, and it's an important thing to understand, is the big advantage and the big risk with this approach is that we're going to be the first utility in the country to roll out the new Oracle product, mm-hmm. the customer information system. And that that actually creates this opportunity because it's connected to meter data management, which you have to have. When you've got automated metering infrastructure, you create a lot of data. You have to have a meter data management system. So it's connected here into the CIS system, so that's a big advantage. But we are, on the cutting edge.
And hopefully not the bleeding edge.
That's the reason for all the testing.
Yeah.
Well put.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Nope. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Next up, I want to invite Mike Coleman to come up. We had some meetings recently on fiber, and Mike's going to give you an overview of that and tell you about what we're going to do with that information.
Thank you. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom, and I updated you on the 7th of October about these meetings that were going to occur on the 8th, 9th, and 10th. We did three meetings in Leavenworth, Eniat, and Manson. We did them in an open house format. We set up four stations and went in with the intent of it being both educational and informational. The first station was, where are we and what have we accomplished to date in the PPB program, the fiber expansion? Second station was, how do we decide where to build? What's all the criteria and what are the decisions that we have to make and where do we build? Third station was the economic drivers of fiber. The two big drivers, as always, are density and distance. And we wanted to share that and how it plays in some of the decision making. The last station was what's next. And in that station, we also included information related to alternate technology to serve some of the more remote areas. And we covered the Microsoft partnership and what we expect out of it. I will thank Commissioner McKenna for attending in Leavenworth and Commissioner Congdon in Eniat and Manson. Total attendees for the three events was 110. So I compare that to some of the strategic planning open houses, and mm-hmm. it was quite a reception.
We don't get that for rate hearings, I don't think.
I will also note that Doug England felt like the attendance in Manson was down significantly. And I'm sorry, Commissioner McKenna also was able to attend part of the Manson open house. But a storm had come through and knocked apples down on the ground. Ooh. So a lot of the orchardists were more taking care of that than attending meetings that night. We got a lot of comments, and interestingly enough, out of the 110, we got 26 comment cards. But we also got a large number of other comments and questions face-to-face, which we attempted to duly record. We're going through and we're analyzing those comments and we're categorizing those comments. And so as we finish that analysis, we'll provide you more information on what we learned out of it. I would tell you that my initial thought is A, the meetings were very successful. B, they accomplished some of the purposes that we set out to accomplish. C, there is a very, very healthy demand for fiber out there. The other thing that stood out to me was, particularly in some of the areas where the customer owners recognize that it's an extremely low-density area and it's a long ways from anywhere, they were pretty open about being willing to look at alternate technology as long as it would provide reasonable service. And so that's a major discussion that's going on between my team and Microsoft right now regarding what are our expectations, and I put pretty high expectations on them. So once we're at the tail end of the process with Microsoft and we're ready to do a proof of concept and we have the performance data from that proof of concept, I would look at doing another series of meetings, probably on a broader basis within the county. So.
Yes, Commissioner Congdon.
So I was at Antioch and at Manson, and first of all, I love the format. People love that format where you just have posters and you had a PUD expert at each one and they move around and people feel a lot freer about asking their questions. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I listened to Mike because I learned too. I need to learn. And I'll tell you, he's so honest and straightforward and just tells it like it is, but in a really nice way. And, you know, it's not what quite a few of the people, especially in Antioch, wanted to hear.
No.
But for the most part, those folks in Antioch, like a Peggy Whitmore, Peggy was, you know, she has a place way up 17 miles up the valley, and she's not going to be seeing fiber soon. But she had some good questions and was very reasonable. But I just thought our staff did an amazing job. And Mike is, I can tell it's hard on Mike because afterwards I'd talk to him and he'd just be, oh, this is hard for me. I want to tell him, yes, I'll bring you fiber, but I can't. So, I mean, you care so much. I know it's hard for you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just, this was kind of a learning opportunity for me. I didn't feel quite like the new guy as much as I have been in the past. And what
you
I mean.
You don't get that yeah. anymore. You don't get to be the new
what I meant by that is I could see the process working and your staff did has done a great job of, you know, we'd have, and what I mean by this is it's kind of the same story. There's just a different neighborhood that storms the group and wants answers. The old groups have been taken care of and fiber moving into their area, and so now you have a new group that they're leveraging on the PUD. They want their fiber, and yet that's a good thing too. We're hearing from people that do want it, who are willing to work together and rally support, and so it just was I agree with Ann. Great process, and the staff did a great job. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I will note that Commissioner McKenna told me at Leavenworth that we, or was it Manson, that we really should do more of these, and I had to remind him of just how much work it is, and that every single one of my staff was in that room. Mm-hmm. So,
And they were all being put to good use. I mean,
they all
needed,
did.
You really needed them all.
Fantastic job. Yes, they did. They did a good job of putting this together. They did a good job of interfacing with the customers, and they did a great job with giving the answers that we were able to give. So.
Great. Mike, thank you very much.
I've got three items that I want to cover. I've been traveling a lot recently. I want to cover some of the things that I learned from that. So first, the American Public Power Association board did select a new executive director. Hopefully you saw that. Joy Ditto will be the new CEO, I think they call her. You know, I would tell you, first of all, from being on the board, that Sue Kelly has done an excellent job. The APPA is in very good shape financially and is doing a good job of serving its members. So Joy's going to walk into a situation that certainly is not a turnaround situation or a problem situation. Joy has a lot of experience. She worked for APPA for a long time in senior roles. She left, became part of the UTC, Utilities Telecommunication Council, I think it is, which we joined a couple of years ago because they do a lot of the work for utilities on telecommunications issues. So Mike and his group decided that was a value add, and we've seen them do good work there. So we have very high hopes for Joy and expectations for her as well. Second, the Public Generating Pool held its annual strategic planning retreat a week ago. And a key issue that was discussed there is the California Independent System Operator has been working with a large group of utilities, mostly energy imbalance market members, of which we are not one. So we're not inside that fence. Talking about the next step, which is called Enhanced Day-Ahead Market. And they have released a proposal. Comments will be due at the end of November. There are a lot of good reasons why an Enhanced Day-Ahead Market should proceed. A lot of things that make sense as you add more variable energy resources to get to a bigger footprint and a larger market. There's one fundamental problem, and that's the governance structure. And the fact that this is still an organization that reports to California elected politicians. And so it's likely that we will be filing comments. We're still working through exactly what those comments would be, but likely that we will file comments at the end of November, and that will be a significant issue for us.
Steve, I think that's interesting because we've been hearing that for over a year, maybe for 2 years, that the people are not happy about the governance structure, but people keep joining. So I guess apparently right. It isn't that big an issue, or I don't know. What's your sense of that?
You know, I think that, first of all, everybody weighs risk differently. And so if you look at the engineering and the economics, it makes a lot of sense to form a market like this. And then there's the political component. And one of the things that we've heard from people who have joined recently is, well, I didn't have much choice because liquidity in the market was going down. And, you know, I didn't have much choice part of that doesn't feel very good. So I think question is, when do you raise an issue and say it's time to think about whether we keep going forward with this until these governance issues get addressed? And to say I'm leaning towards thinking that it's time to do that.
So how are those board members selected? Appointed by, how does that work?
Appointed by the governor with approval by the California State Senate.
All California?
Right, and operating under a California statute. And the California statute actually has included in it that the operation of the CAISO should be for the benefit of California ratepayers. So This is where you say statutes and mission matter. You know, in this case, it's difficult to get past that. Now, I say that with some hesitation because there are some thoughts and some ideas about ways to possibly find a way to make this work without a legislative change in California. So we're staying open to that and having conversations about it. We'll see how those evolve over the course of the next month as we develop our comments. And then the final thing is, I did make a trip through DC as a co-chair of the power group, talk about the Columbia River Treaty issues, and I'm just gonna be honest and say it was discouraging. Discouraging what we heard. We had thought earlier this summer that possibly the U.S. negotiating team was moving closer to at least consideration of issuing a 10-year notice of termination of the power provisions of the treaty. And I would say, based on this, that was a misread. of the circumstance, that they, if anything, are moving further away, not closer towards. And that's very disappointing to us. And so we're definitely at the point of rethinking our strategy right now. And so more conversation to come on that. And that's what I had for you today.
Okay. Thank you. So we're on to commission items. And commission items?
Only one that I've got, budget PUD Association Budget Committee met this past week, had a good meeting, recognized that under George Kahn's leadership, we have focused and made more efficient our budget year by year for several years. We've gone several years without any assessment increase, and the recommendation this year that's going to be made to the board in November is for the new due structure to incorporate a 3.3% rate increase, which will keep the association at a stable position. They've been doing a variety of creative things over the last several years to reduce costs, and have finally gotten to that point where they can really go no further. And I give a lot of credit to George and the staff for doing that for several years, because I don't know how many years it's been since there's been a dues increase, but it's been a lot. So it was a good meeting. Some good. I think the new members that were there appreciated it. Got a good education, and Steve, you would have you would have been right at home, because you're no longer a new commissioner. So, anyway, that's all I have on that.
Good, good. I think we have a proposed motion for under commission items.
We were going to have one.
Let's see.
I got it right. Thank you.
Oh, here it is.
You got it? Go ahead.
So, yes, Mr. Chairman, I move to set a special meeting on November 26, 2019 at 1 p.m. at the Confluence Technology Center, 285 Technology Center Way, Wenatchee, for the purpose of holding a tri-commission meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Congdon. We've got a motion.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it. All right. Well, very good. We're going to move on then to delegation or follow-up of delegation of action items.
Let's see. We've got a couple. So we're very close on the answer that Commissioner Bowles asked about storage and retrievability for IT, but not quite there. So you'll be getting something pretty soon on that. You should have received the information about the Lady of the Lake cruise from Kim Craig on the same day as the meeting last time. And then you should have received from Mike Coleman information about NOAANet that went out on an October 10th email. Also, just following up on items from the board or an item from the board workshop, hopefully, Commissioner Bowles, you will be receiving your newsletter. It turns out that when you moved, that that apparently confused our systems.
Yeah.
So hopefully you'll be getting, you've received the last one and you'll get them.
Well, the bill is paid.
We're very happy to hear that. And that's actually it.
Okay. And then delegation of action items.
So I've got three from this meeting. No, actually four having to do with Stehekin, three with Stehekin. First of all, some information about the impacts of frequent starts and stops on the diesel generator, on the longevity of the generator. So we'll get you something back on that. Two-part, we want to develop what I would call a mini integrated resource plan. What's the options for how to provide service in Stehekin, both in terms of supply and demand reduction options, and to be able to get back to you on that. And then from that, we'll be developing an outreach strategy for working with the county and the National Park Service, because then we'll have a good base of information to have that conversation with them about what our choices are. And then finally, Mike Coleman will provide additional information on around the feedback received and what we're going to do with it from the fiber meetings.
Okay.
That's what I got. Did I miss anything?
Good. I think everything good.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have any public for comment. Any matters of general business which might come before the commission? Hearing none. We have the need for an executive session. Roughly how long?
45 minutes.
All right. So we'll have an executive session to discuss with legal counsel, agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by RCW 42.30.110(1)(i), and to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by RCW 42.30.110(1)(g) for 45 minutes. Okay. All right. We are coming out of executive session. It is October 21st, 2019. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we are adjourned.